This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. With most of the attention on the U.S. presidential polls this Wednesday, it's easy to overlook the other major election taking place much closer to home in Myanmar on November the 8th. Today on the show, we're putting the spotlight on Myanmar's elections and why observers are pessimistic about the outcome. Joining me to discuss this is journalist Andrew Nakamson, who's based in Yangon and recently penned a piece for Foreign Policy on the Myanmar elections. Andrew, good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start by getting an idea of how Myanmar is coping with COVID-19. So initially, Myanmar seemed sheltered from the pandemic. It reported few cases in contrast with the rest of the region, but the number of cases has risen dramatically over the past few weeks. And I think it's reporting about over 1,000 new cases per day. So you're in Yangon. Maybe you can give us a picture of what it's like on the ground.
Yeah, so the government was very hesitant initially to introduce a lockdown because we had already done a lockdown in April. And the general economic situation is obviously impacting Myanmar as it is impacting many countries. So they were a little late to, once the second wave started, to actually give stay-at-home orders. And when they did that in September, there was about 2 or 3 weeks when everybody was following that pretty strictly. But I think the economic situation is just too desperate here right now, and people just really can't afford to stay home. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, the government said that factories could reopen, and everyone just kind of took that as permission to break stay-at-home orders, even though they weren't actually given permission to do that. So you started seeing a lot of shops reopening and a lot of informal street side stands reopening, and the parks are kind of full with people again. And you're even starting to see restaurants reopening and people eating inside, even though they're not supposed to do that. Barbershops reopening, gyms, fairly high risk places all reopening, even though they haven't been given permission. And at the same time, we're preparing for the elections. So I think there's a real concern that this reopening could lead to the virus surging and circulating in these past 2 or 3 weeks, and then the election serving as a kind of super spreader event. I mean, that would be the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm. How is the public looking at COVID-19, actually? How high is the concern for the virus, given that the increasing cases is still fairly recent? Are people maybe complacent about the threat that it poses?
I think people do take it seriously here. I mean, when you go outside, everybody is wearing a face mask. So that's one thing I've noticed. I've spoken to people who are nervous about voting because they've been actually honoring the lockdown and they're a little scared to go outside. When I've spoken to people from conflict zones, they tend to be a little bit less afraid of it. I guess they just...
There are other things to worry about.
Right. Compared to being bombed and shot at, COVID doesn't actually seem quite as serious. But I would say that overall, the majority of people are taking it quite seriously.
And it's against this COVID-19 backdrop, as you mentioned, that elections are going to take place in about a week. And I think here in Malaysia, we can share the concerns about elections being a super spreader event, seeing as what happened in our state elections in Sabah. The government didn't entertain calls for the elections to be postponed over COVID-19. What was the reasoning given?
I think it makes sense not to delay the election from kind of a neutral perspective, in that COVID-19 isn't really going anywhere and they don't have a lot of wiggle room. They have to have the election done by January. So if you talk to a lot of analysts here, there's this what can they really do mentality, because, you know, they could delay it for 2 months, but COVID's not going to be gone in 2 months, and it could even be worse in 2 months. The opposition parties are really upset about it because it has restricted campaigning. And a lot of the opposition parties are relatively new or relatively small parties that really needed to get their name out there. And I think that's a fair complaint, but I just don't really know if an election delay would have solved that problem.
Right. And I think early voting just started last week or so. How are polls being conducted in early voting? Are there sufficient safety measures being taken?
Yeah. So right now it's just people over the age of 60. So it's a smaller, more manageable group, and it's obviously the high-risk populations. From what I've seen, they have been fairly careful about it. They're doing mobile vote collecting, where somebody is kind of going around the township and picking up votes from different houses. And there are also some polling stations and schools and stuff that are open. I walked around yesterday and observed a couple of them. And from what I saw, all the poll workers were wearing a lot of protective gear. They were wearing hair nets and gloves and face masks and face shields. And all of the voters were at least wearing masks, and some of them were wearing more than that. But social distancing wasn't really being observed, so people were still standing quite close to each other.
Okay, this is only Myanmar's second democratic election. So back in 2015, the party led by Aung San Suu Kyi, the National League for Democracy, or the NLD, earned a landslide victory to much fanfare, both locally and abroad. But the 2020 elections are definitely not being seen in the same light as 2015. Why is that?
Yeah, so I think in 2015, there were a lot of the same problems that there are now, but there was a general sense of excitement. It was the first election where the NLD was participating and was widely expected to win. I mean, they participated in 1990, but then the election was annulled. So 2015 had this real sense of optimism, and people were critical of certain aspects of the election, but that criticism fell on the USDP and the military. Now in 2020, the NLD is doing a lot of the same things that the USDP did, but they're not receiving the same amount of criticism from Western countries. They are from journalists and analysts, but the West has been relatively silent. And among those issues, one of the biggest ones and one of the most disappointing has been the censorship of opposition parties. So opposition parties, when they present their party platform on state media, have not been allowed to be critical of the government and have been censored in some ways that really don't even make sense. Like the Iraqi National Party was not allowed to talk about voter disinterest in Rakhine. Mm-hmm. That was struck from the record. Another smaller party tried to talk about children's rights issues and was not allowed to speak about that. Hmm. And the NLD hasn't really said anything about it because the Union Election Commission makes these decisions, but the UEC is seen as being very close to the NLD, and all of the members of the UEC are appointed by the NLD. And the NLD hasn't said, you know, we disagree with these decisions or anything like that. Another similar issue, there was a small but growing movement of boycotters who basically said that it's impossible to hold a free and fair election in Myanmar under the 2008 constitution, mm-hmm. which a lot of people agree with because that's the constitution that guarantees the military 25% of the seats in parliament and requires more than 75% to change the constitution. So it's this catch 22. And the NLD responded really aggressively and really angrily towards the boycotters, basically telling them, you know, we fought for the right to vote. How dare you not exercise it? And the UEC was threatening to arrest people, even though there's nothing in the election laws that actually say you can't boycott. And even though the NLD boycotted the 2010 election for the exact same reason that they didn't trust the 2008 constitution. So it just seems like the NLD has kind of lost sight of some of its pro-democracy roots and has allowed the political system to kind of change them more than people were expecting.
Maybe you can talk to us about the opposition landscape, because from what I understand, the NLD maintains majority of popular support anyway. So what kind of opposition actually exists with regard to the NLD?
Yeah, so the NLD is still broadly popular. And the huge advantage that the NLD has is that it's really the only big national party. So the USDP is kind of discredited at this point. I think there are very few people who expect them to do well.
And USDP is the political party aligned with the military, or are they the military? Just to clarify.
Right. They're very, very closely aligned with the military. They're often referred to as a military proxy. They're as close as you could possibly be. And they're kind of considered the main opposition, even though if you look at the breakdown of parliament, they have so few seats. But with their partnership in the military, it kind of elevates them to the status of opposition. But they're not expected to do very well at all. And then the problem is the other opposition parties are these fractured ethnic minority parties. So you have ethnic minority parties in Kaya State, in Kayin State, in Rakhine State, but none of them have united to be a national interracial ethnic minority party. We haven't seen that yet. So it just makes it a lot harder for them in Myanmar's first past the post political system to ever win a significant number of seats. And then you have a couple other recently formed opposition parties. There's the People's Pioneer Party, which was formed by an NLD breakaway, and then the Union Betterment Party, which is formed by a military breakaway. And they've also both been hurt by the COVID restrictions because they're a new party, so people don't really know them, and they haven't had a great chance to get their messages out. Basically, the NLD is expected to win pretty decisively.
Okay. You spoke about the treatment of minority groups in these elections as a major concern. I mean, minority parties have always been on the back foot in Myanmar. Has the situation changed or deteriorated since 2015 in this regard?
It depends who you ask, and it depends what part of the country you're in. The situation in Rakhine has gotten much, much worse than it was in 2015. And then things are starting to get bad in Shan State again, but previous conflicts in Shan State were even more intense than they are now. Parts of Kayin State are better than they were in the last election. But in the last election, there was more ethnic minority enthusiasm for the NLD. So you had ethnic minorities and ethnic minority activists supporting the NLD because they believed that the NLD would bring democracy and they believed that would benefit them. And I think what a lot of them have found is that the NLD hasn't really prioritized ethnic minority issues. So I think there are a lot of ethnic activists and ethnic politicians and ethnic armed groups that are really disappointed by the NLD's rule and had hoped to use this election to make a statement. But I do think the COVID situation is probably going to make it so that they don't even make the small gains that they might have made otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to Andrew Nakamson, a journalist based in Yangon, on the upcoming Myanmar elections. After these messages, how bad is the civil conflict? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Hello, you're tuned into Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. I'm Shazana. Myanmar will hold its second democratic elections on Sunday, the 8th of November, against the backdrop of COVID-19 and ongoing civil conflict in parts of the country. With me today on the show to discuss this is Andrew Nakamson, a Yangon-based journalist who's observing the elections. Andrew, 2 weeks ago, the government announced the cancellation of elections in certain areas of the country. Earlier, we spoke about how the pandemic wasn't a justification to postpone the elections. So why have elections been cancelled in these areas?
So it's because of the conflict situation. I mean, the big story is Rakhine State. There were a few other cancellations in Kayin and Bago and Shan State, but overall fairly similar or even less than in 2015. But in Rakhine, the cancellations were massive. I think 9 townships out of 17 were completely canceled, with another 4 partially canceled. And it was done so in a way that's really tilted the playing fields in favor of the NLD. I mean, the conflict is bad. And it is much, much worse than it was in 2015. So I think everybody was expecting more cancellations in Rakhine because of this conflict. But the way it was done was really not transparent and has prompted a lot of accusations of foul play, which I think are pretty reasonable. There are some townships like Pak Ta Township, which really haven't seen much fighting at all, that have been subjected to pretty major cancellations. And then Paletwa Township in Chin State, which is held by the NLD, was initially had no cancellations whatsoever. And Paletwa has seen the most incidents of fighting all year. So basically, all of the townships where the Arakan National Party was strong were canceled. And most of the areas that were held by the NLD were not canceled. And it didn't seem to fit the actual pattern of where the conflict was. It seemed to mostly fit this political landscape. So I think that's why people were really upset. And I think it's going to have really bad consequences on the conflict in Rakhine, because a big part of the conflict in Rakhine is local people feeling like they're not represented by the political system. So if you take away their right to vote, that gets exacerbated so much. And there's going to be more and more people feeling like the only way forward is through revolution.
Can we backtrack and get a sense of the scale of civil conflict that's happening in Rakhine State at the moment? Most of our listeners associate the Rakhine State with the 2017 Rohingya crisis, which saw the exodus of hundreds and thousands of Rohingya from Myanmar. What is the state of the conflict now?
Yeah, so this conflict's very different from the Rohingya crisis. The Rohingya crisis was primarily the Myanmar military against an unarmed civilian group. I mean, there was presence of ARSA, the Iraq and Rohingya Salvation Army, which the Myanmar government has blamed the entire crisis on. But if you just look at the landscape of how that conflict went, it was clearly a military versus a civilian population. Whereas this conflict in Rakhine is very, very different. The Iraqi army is a very strong, a very powerful armed force. And the Iraqi army represents the ethnic Rakhine, which is the other major ethnic group living in Rakhine State, the Rakhine and the Rohingya. And most areas of Myanmar have ethnic armed groups. What really spurred the rise of the Iraqi army was that the Iraqi National Party did really, really well in the 2015 election. They won the largest share of the vote in Rakhine State. They won the state parliament. They made real gains. They were one of the only parties that actually won a significant number of seats. And it didn't translate into any increased political power because the Myanmar government is so centralized. So the president still gets to appoint the chief minister of Rakhine State. So basically the NLD got to appoint the administration of Rakhine State, even though the Iraqi National Party won Rakhine State. So this really angered a lot of people because they felt like they had played along. They had said, okay, we'll participate in your democracy. We'll vote. We'll do everything that you want us to do. But then you're not giving us any greater power based on the fact that people want to be ruled by the Iraqi National Party. They don't want the NLD. The conflict's gotten, it's really spiraling. It's getting out of control. You hear reports of shelling and bombing and civilians being killed nearly every single day. Just a couple days ago, the Tatmadaw, the Myanmar military, opened fire on a boat that was carrying aid relief from the International Committee of the Red Cross and killed one of the people on the boat. The Iraqi army kidnapped three NLD candidates and is holding them hostage. It's really turning into just a really bad situation for all sides. And obviously the civilians, the ethnic Rakhine and the Rohingya, are the ones being caught in the middle.
Right. And why hasn't there been more global attention on this? I think you wrote in your piece about how Western countries have been unusually silent about the human rights transgressions going on with regard to the elections. But even this larger conflict, it does not seem to be getting a lot of attention globally.
That's an interesting point. I guess I'm so heavily involved in it that I almost didn't notice that. But yeah, I mean, I do think the Rakhine crisis right now hasn't gotten as much international focus. And I don't know why that is. Maybe because it's been contained to just Rakhine State and people are used to Rakhine State now being a site of atrocities and human rights abuses. And there's maybe almost a Rakhine State fatigue where people are like, yeah, we know that place is, you know, out of control because of the Rohingya crisis. But I mean, I have a feeling that people are going to start paying attention because I think, especially after this election, things are going to get worse and I could see the conflict spreading. If you're the Iraqi army and you say, okay, we've been, you know, fighting for a couple of years now and the government's not really paying attention, maybe we have to take the fight a little further. Maybe we have to take the fight to other parts of the country. Or maybe we have to just start really advocating for independence and we have to start kind of setting up local government and stuff like that. Some of my contacts in Rakhine have been saying we've always wanted independence, but we were willing to play the Myanmar government game and say that we just wanted greater autonomy. But now that they've canceled the vote, people are a lot more openly talking about wanting independence. So that might bring the conflict a little bit more to international attention.
Is there anything positive that we can take away from from these elections at this moment? Or is it really a milestone towards a less democratic future for Myanmar?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there's definitely a split among the analysts and journalists in Myanmar. It's not like everyone unanimously thinks that the whole situation is totally screwed. There are a lot of people who point out, look at the region, look at the context. Cambodia's elections are much worse. Lao doesn't have elections. Vietnam doesn't have elections. So there are some people who say, you know, Myanmar actually, the elections might be flawed, but this is pretty good for the region. And it's only the second democratic election. So let's give them a little bit of time and see how it goes. And I think that's fair. But I also think that the situation, the conflict with ethnic minorities, I see no indication of that getting better. And I think that the issue with elections is they're very tense and they're very confrontational. And the peace process is still totally stalled and totally disrupted. So every 5 years, you're going to have this renewed intensity of ethnic conflict caused by the elections. And until the government gets really serious about the peace process, which they haven't been so far, it's just going to continue. And the sad thing and the pessimistic thing is that just every 5 years, the conflict might get worse as elections bring out these tensions again. So,
all right. And on that note, Andrew, thank you so much for sharing your insights on what's happening in Myanmar at the moment. I've been speaking to Andrew Nakimson, a journalist based in Yangon, who's reporting on the Myanmar elections that will take place on Sunday, the 8th of November. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. The 10 a.m. news bulletin is up next, and then it's over to the Enterprise team. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.